come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Thanks again for listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast, which comes at you every Saturday night from a dank, dark basement in a location that hasn't been disclosed.
It's Colin's house. It's Colin's basement.
There you go. Sorry. Mystery. The bubble has been broken. So it's a movie review podcast. Hopefully you know that already by listening to it. We have 200 and some odd episodes on iTunes.
Some of them good. Radio. Some of them are very good.
Some are even listenable. I was going to say.
Some have good audio quality.
Yeah.
Some of them just, spiraled into madness, last one, unfortunately.
Some are lost.
Lost.
Some are a half hour long.
So who are these amazing people who are going to be talking about tonight's movie?
Michaela.
Holly.
Sean.
And I'm the aforementioned Colin of the basement, basement dweller. And tonight the movie was chosen by Sean.
Me.
Sean, what, you were almost going to shout your name out, right? I saw you, Sean.
Me.
Sean.
What'd you watch, or what did we watch tonight?
1990s Darkman, directed by Sam Raimi.
What would we know
Written
him
by
from?
Sam Raimi. I mean, many things. Evil Dead. Evil Dead 2.
Mm-hmm.
Army of Darkness.
Simple Plan.
Simple Plan. No, okay. For Love of the Game. what else?
Drag Me to Hell.
Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, there you go. Oz the Great
Oz,
and Powerful.
Yeah.
Darkman. Yeah, so this is Darkman, 1990, you said. Okay, so this kind of, we would describe this as maybe a superhero-type origin story, true or false?
True, because Sam Raimi wanted to make a superhero movie. They wouldn't let him have the Shadow.
Why not?
I don't know. They didn't think he could, I guess he wasn't like... It's a property they just didn't want to give to Sam Raimi. I don't know. He'd only done up till Evil Dead 2 at this point.
When did they do The Shadow? Universal Pictures did it.
Yeah, it was like
2004?
Oh, did they do it? What?
Yeah, the one with Alec. Yeah.
Oh, that one's the other one's The Spirit. My bad.
Right. Yeah.
This movie came out at a time when they're like in the 90s when they were taking like 30s and 40s superheroes that were like radio shows and no one really gave a shit about and making them into movies. Like you had The Shadow, The Phantom, the of British Avengers.
Came out in the 90s. Zorro came back.
Very true.
Yeah, it was a weird time for comic book movies.
I remember The Avengers.
Well, for you kids listening, there was a time before The Avengers known as the pre-Marvel cinematic era, right?
Is that its official title?
No, that's what we're naming it. Trademark the Saturday Night Freak Show 2017.
I think we'll get sued for that one, Colin.
Pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe. All right, so
they made movies back in the day.
Necessarily comic book superhero movies.
No, not necessarily. Just kind of characters who were, I guess they were trying to make larger than life their own superheroes, especially if they couldn't get rights to certain ones, like at this time, Batman came out the year before.
Yeah.
Which is another one that Raimi wanted. He's like, I want The Shadow or Batman or anything like that. You can kind of tell that that is what he wanted because, I mean, this is basically a Batman movie. It's basically a combination of Batman and RoboCop, if you look at it.
Did they shoot, like, some of the factory stuff in the same place where RoboCop was shot?
No. It's not the same place because the geography is different. But it feels like it, doesn't it? Like, those scenes were near the end where the all Durant's guys are coming in, shooting up the place. It kind of feels like the ending of RoboCop. Mm-hmm. To me, it does. Mm-hmm. They're even kind of like standing the same way as they fire their guns.
Yeah.
Well, because you have like the villain is an industrialist who wants to, you know, raise the old town and build like a new shining set of skyscrapers.
Like OCP?
You know? Right.
Like in RoboCop. That's the other thing, the future city. Yeah. That's where the more RoboCop angle comes in.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of Phantom of the Opera, maybe, in the way that the guy looks in the doomed romance. I mean, that's maybe, well, I wouldn't even say that that's exclusive to this superhero story. The idea that, you know, he was in love, he was going to get engaged, and now because he's horribly disfigured, he can't, you know, get the woman that he loves.
Yeah. But they even give him a bat cave in this movie, complete with pigeons flying up instead of bats. It's his own version of the bat cave that he sets up.
So what was the deal that happened? Like, I mean, okay, so in the 60s, obviously, he had the Batman TV show. Big, yep. Bright, colorful, funny.
Bam.
You know, pow.
Yeah. And I don't know if, I mean, obviously that's not the earliest incarnation of superheroes on screen, no. Because you had Superman, you know, the Max Fleischer cartoons and
the TV show.
But okay, so actually, like a cinematic.
Big screen cinematic superheroes?
Yeah. You had Superman in 1978, right? That issued in or ushered in the modern era.
Mm-hmm.
Or was like the first, was it the first superhero movie? I mean, there's Superman versus the Mole People in like the 30s, right, or something, yeah. Like that. But
I guess
the
I can't,
Swamp Thing came after that.
Yeah, right? That was all later. That was,
and then there was like the 80s. Punisher and a Captain America, and you know, some, right. Through the 80s. But like, it really got clicking with the Batman movie in 1989, and this is like from that era. And then there was like superhero movies throughout the 90s. You remember Condor Man?
No, I wish.
Since you just came up with that one, you need to list more. Did they make a Condor Man movie?
They did. Condor Man was an original idea. It was from Walt Disney Pictures. I have a list.
Oh,
here we go. Wow.
All right. So in the 80s, oh, shit. I forgot about it. Okay, so 80s comic book heroes.
Okay.
The highlights. Superman, Condor Man, the original, you know, like original idea. Swamp Thing was based on a comic. The Toxic Avenger.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And Batman. In the 90s, all of a sudden there's an explosion. You got Darkman, the Guyver, the Rocketeer.
The Rocketeer.
The Crow. Yeah. The Shadow. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Mask. Yeah. Tank the Girl. Mask.
Tank
superhero?
Girl.
Superhero? Tank Comic book property.
Yeah, yeah.
Judge Dredd, the Phantom, Dredd. As Michaela said, Phantom. Spawn.
Spawn. Yeah. Ah, who could forget
and
that?
Blade.
Seminal classic. Mm-hmm. Blade.
And so Blade begins like Marvel's like, we're really getting
Marvel's
into
like grabbing properties, put some money behind it.
Yeah, because Spider-Man comes after that, and the X-Men.
Yep.
And away you go into the 2000s, and then, you know, it's comic book superhero movies every week.
Basically.
At the box office. So I was curious what was, or what you guys think was going on, that like, you know, the bright, poppy 60s Batman era, that's what a comic book movie is, or superhero. Mm. And then by the time you get to the late 80s, 90s, every single one of those, I think that I mentioned, Spawn, The Crow, The Shadow,
a tad darker,
The Guyver, Darkman. What's going on in the zeitgeist at the time, or what, you know, why are they all like dark, gothic?
Were we used to a history of these superheroes being bright, shiny figures in the comic books? Like, not necessarily, I mean, Superman was... How dark did he get in the comic books?
Not at all.
I mean, he died, but that's about it. He's always been kind of a bright, shining beacon.
That was a huge thing, though, right. when he died.
Right.
And that was, but that's, wasn't that, was that 90s?
Was that like 94?
Late 80s, early 90s, I thought.
Well, the Crisis on Infinite Earths where they killed Supergirl, that was 85, I remember, because or 86, because I bought that one. And then they killed the Flash. Mm-hmm. And that was when they started doing that, you know, hey, we can actually kill off our comic book heroes.
93,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's when the comics went dark when the movies did. Like, everything just went dark.
Right. Do we blame that on Tim Burton? Because, I mean, Batman's a darker character anyway, but he kind of took that and molded it to his sensibilities in which, you know, are dark as it is. Dark and twisty. That's, you can, that describes, you know, kind of his aesthetic and just the way he makes movies anyway. Literally.
German Expressionism.
Yes, very much indeed. Yep. He loves the German Expressionists.
Yes, he does.
Yeah, the movie Batman has that look of, I suppose, German expressionism, but it's also that...
part two, even more so.
Like, World's Fair kind of...
Yeah.
Like, all that future... Like,
right.
What do you call that?
World of Tomorrow?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where, like, the skyscrapers go up forever, and they have the, you know, the bridge that connects them, and, you know...
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
I gotcha.
Yeah, because it's stuff like from Metropolis or whatever.
I guess you're going still back to Metropolis.
Yes.
German expressionism.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Indeed.
Well, Batman had gone dark in the comics. There was the Frank Miller, The Dark Knight Returns.
Returns.
Mm-hmm. And that, I think, like dramatically changed Batman's character.
When did that come out?
So I think that was like 85.
Give me a decade. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a four-part issue or something like that.
85 was a good year.
Or was it a whole, maybe it was a 12-issue run. I'm not entirely sure now. I have the collected trade paperback.
Right, everybody's got the trade paperback now.
Yeah. So that like presaged the entry into, hey, everybody's going to have like a dark. I forgot to mention RoboCop on there. He would be a comic book
very type true. Very true. He fits in.
That they made up out of whole cloth. Okay, so Sam Raimi, well, he wants to do Batman. They're doing it. Wants to do the Shadow. They won't give let it him.
To him. Yep.
So he says,
I'm going to create my own. And I'm going to create Darkman.
All right. So what was the, I heard something about the process in the writing of this movie.
What did you like, hear?
I heard something like Sam Raimi himself did something like 12 drafts. And other writers are brought in. Who's credited on this?
Well, I think story by Raimi.
It was like there was five names.
Five or six.
Screenplay by Chuck Farrar and Sam Raimi and Ivan Raimi and Dan Golden and Joshua Golden with an uncredited rewrite by the Coen brothers.
Really?
Really? Yes. Huh.
Huh.
Yeah, because they used to hang out a lot. That's who's in the...
Crime Wave, the, is it?
What?
Crime Wave? Was that the... Was that a Sam Raimi movie that the Coen brothers co-wrote?
I think so. I think so, yes. But they used to all they lived together at this point. It was the Coen brothers, Sam Raimi, and Francis McDormand all lived in the same place.
What? That sounds awesome. Yeah, I know, right? Out there.
That's, yeah. So they were all hanging out.
That's a reality show I want to watch. Yeah.
That's the Coen brothers in the Evil Dead car that you see for a brief second during the highway scene where he's dangling above the cars and everything. Where the car
really? In Darkman?
Yeah, in Darkman. That's the Coen brothers driving the car.
Oh.
And that's where the car awesome. Makes an appearance. So.
Wow.
Yeah, uncredited rewrite by them. So there's a lot of writers on this one.
Yeah. Does it feel like it was passed through a lot of hands, or is this like a, what do you think, a solid, I mean, I'm just curious, like, you know, what, maybe we don't know where it started or what the original idea was and why it took, you know, so many people to reshape it.
I mean, not knowing anything about where the movie kind of, what it started out as versus what we got on screen, like, I can't tell what would have been changed or even what would have been kept. Like sometimes you can see pieces of like, oh, this part was part of this, but then this part leads nowhere. You can almost see like different pieces as if it was written by different writers. The only thing I can say about this is that maybe we don't know like Liam Neeson's Peyton Westlake, his ultimate goal at the end, aside from saving Julie, like what we don't know where he's going from here. Or what, you know, what he's doing besides just getting money and getting revenge and making more masks.
Yeah, because I mean, maybe that's we're talking about the ending too early, but well, hopefully you've seen it by now, maybe, or you're thinking about watching this movie. But the idea that, you know, you get the hero who's tortured with a physical ailment, so he wants to cure it.
Yes.
Right. And he's been working on this technology to. Like basically do 3D printing of organic tissue,
yes.
Skin material. This is what he's doing prior to the
how lucky for him,
yeah,
that he gets blown
so convenient.
Up. Yes, very convenient that he has this at his disposal after he should become horribly scarred.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his ultimate goal. I mean, afterwards, now he's got a real purpose is to try and make himself normal again so that he can get Julie back.
I guess, but that does kind of run. Counter to what he actually states at the end of the movie that, you know.
Yeah.
Peyton's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, he says he's gotten, it's just, I guess the story is about him discovering, I mean, he's afflicted with, you know, after being exploded, after being blown up.
Way into the sky, like hundreds of feet into the air.
Yeah. Yes.
And then lands in a body of water.
Oh, that was fantastic.
It was great.
That's the Swamp Thing opening. Well, he doesn't get blown up. He gets blown out. It's the same thing. He's a scientist working on a serum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The bad guys come in, blow the building up.
So it's
he's
like
on fire.
And
he goes
in
the
swamp.
Water. Yeah. Yeah.
Well.
Huh. Yeah.
But I suppose the story is about him learning to accept what he has become because I don't think he can make himself look normal, but he's not going to be normal. Like he says, it's about the person inside. Began to change. And he realizes he's not going to be able to fix that. He can put new skin on, but, you know, he's kind of deranged at this point.
Well, there's an explanation that the movie gives for this, which is like one of the, I guess it's, you're trying to give a guy who's, you know, he's got a look because he's deformed, right? Mm-hmm. A look, a design for a comic book hero, right?
Yeah.
So he wears bandages and he wears the Phantom of the Opera getup.
Right. He's got the cloak and the hat, yeah.
But to explain how he can be like somehow more than just a man, right? Yes. The superhero aspect of it, he, because of he's burned over most of his body, the doctors that find him give him an operation, which I'm not entirely sure of the science of this, but we got to assume, right, that they look this up. But they sever some nerve in his brain, so he can't feel anything at all.
Yeah, he can't feel pain anymore.
The muscles are still responding, whatever there's left of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he can still move, but he can't actually feel anything. You know, imagine what that's got to be like. And that's why once you hear that in the movie, you're like, wait, is he feeling that? Yeah. No, mm-hmm. he's not feeling this. Right.
Yeah, but he didn't really seem to require much therapy once that happened. You think?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Like, if you can't feel anything, you're gonna have to practice like picking things up.
Right.
You're gonna need some work.
Oh yeah, there are. My hands. There's like a really rare condition actually where people don't feel pain, and like it's hell on the people that have to live with them, because they like a lot of them end up having their teeth taken out and get fake teeth, and like just like it's like having a baby constantly because they can't tell when they've hurt themselves. Yeah. So
but he just jumped right back into his research.
Yeah, of course. He's gonna
figure out. That's what he lives for.
It's true.
Yeah, he does moan the loss of his hands, though.
He does.
I remember in the theater, everybody laughed at that.
It is his agony scream. Is it is kind of it's a little goofy.
This is the second Sam Raimi movie. Maybe third, second for sure, where we have a character like screaming my hand. You know, so that Evil Dead 2, give me back my hand. Yeah.
I saw they worked in, you were talking about a Funny Games reference on the rubber episode that
we
did.
Got another one in
there. There we go. Funny Games. Out again. I saw a reference tonight to American Werewolf in London. They had the nurse from American Werewolf in London, Jenny Ogeter, is in this as the nurse at the hospital.
Awesome. Oh, I didn't notice
and
that.
And at the scene where Westlake escapes through the window, there's a group of people standing in the doorway, and she's like, "You must let me through." And that's her line from the end of American Werewolf in London, where she has to get through a group of people.
That's
like, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, well, who else is in the movie?
And John Landis, director of American Werewolf in London, is there as another doctor.
Yes.
With the, yeah. So
another friend. They just all hung out back in the day.
I love it. I love
so
it.
So awesome. When time travel's perfected, we'll go back in time and hang out with those
just
people.
Just gonna start appearing in pictures of famous people. Yeah. Just like, is that Michaela?
Yeah. That's
sweet. Just photo bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Nicolas Cage, am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Vampire.
He's already been doing it for 200 years.
Is he a vampire? I don't.
There's a picture online of like a soldier from like the Civil War that looks exactly like
Nicolas Cage.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah, I thought there were a couple other ones too. Like,
oh, you say Nick Cage? You said Jack Nicholson?
No, Nick Cage.
Nicholas Cage.
Did you say Nick Cage?
Yeah,
I think so.
I don't think
that's
you
what
did.
They knew I'm when pretty I was sure talking you heard, about.
Yeah,
I'm hearing things. Where then?
Okay. Are you stroking out over there? Are you okay?
I don't know.
Less beer this week than last week. If you endured our Ghost in the Shell mini episode,
there will definitely be less beer just by default. Yeah. I would feel. Yep.
So the villains in this movie are
Larry Drake,
portrayed by Larry. Well, yeah, okay. So Larry Drake is Durant.
Robert G. Durant.
So who is he? What's his deal?
As an actor or as a character? As in Robert G. Durant. He's kind of the muscle for Strack, I guess it is. Strack's the guy who's grabbing the property and building up the new city. And Durant is his muscle. That's basically it.
Yeah, he's like the well-heeled.
His might-be-gay muscle.
Yeah, who has his posse of people, including Ted.
Ted Raimi, yes. As his
guy in there. And Nicholas Wirth.
Love interest.
From Swamp Thing. The fucking bald guy.
Ah.
Yeah, he was Bruno or whatever in Swamp Thing.
I've never seen Swamp Thing.
Oh, okay. Well. Oh. We'll have to fix that on the Saturday Night Creep Show. Craven movie?
I've seen bits and pieces. I'm sure there was a creature featured where it did Swamp Thing. And there was a Swamp Thing too, right?
Yeah. The Return of Swamp Thing?
Yeah, The Return of Swamp Thing.
With Heather Locklear?
Yeah, I'm sure that was running at USA at some point.
That one is not good at all, but it's got an awesome Swamp Thing suit.
Yeah.
Why haven't we brought Swamp Thing back to the...
I'm still waiting for Jared Sin MF-er.
Well, you're waiting for that for the pre-show. I'm wondering why there isn't a Swamp Thing remake since we're going back to comics.
Well, now that R-rated comic book movies are being more financially successful. I'm sure it's not far away at this point.
Yeah, somebody
because
will
you
grab
haven't
that up.
Made it yet, Colin.
There you go.
There you go.
Swamp Thing.
Somebody will find that thing and be like, I love Swamp Thing. I love Swamp Thing for years. I'll make it. And yeah. they'll have to make it significantly lower budget, I think.
And then when you can't do it, then you'll have to go to Marvel and get Man Thing.
Man Thing.
Swamp Things.
He's not as cool.
Lesser cousin.
Man, when do we get Man Bat? I want
a
Man Bat.
Man-Bat.
When do we get Man Bat? That'd be great. Bring that one in,
yeah.
Fucking Zack Snyder.
Yeah. See, they never do the comics like I was reading. House of Mystery and Tomb of Dracula and...
you got plenty of Dracula movies. Calm down.
Werewolf by Night. Yeah. Okay. Those are all Marvel, I think. Well, then he had Blade and he was hunting down the Werewolf by Night, probably. Yeah. I lost my train of thought. Okay.
So, Darkman.
Robert Durant.
Robert Durant.
This was before or after Dr. Giggles?
I'm after?
We asked why, because before. Larry Drake, who plays the bad guy here, is Dr. Giggles. He was on L.A. Law.
Oh, yeah.
For a very long time. And a great horror movie made for TV that you should check out if you haven't seen it, called Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, where he also
that
plays.
Awesome.
It is very good.
Is it?
He's a... mentally handicapped fellow. He did this in like 1981 and then ended up playing a mentally handicapped guy in L.A. Law for.
Oh, right.
Huh. Yeah.
Dr. Giggles was 1992.
Oh, so he followed this up.
So this was his
ascent into
cinema. Into cinema greatness, I think is what you were going to say. Yes, you are correct.
Yeah.
What after that, though? I haven't seen him around.
What are you talking about? Dark Man 2, The Return of Durant?
He somehow survived the... he gets into a helicopter crash in this movie, folks.
Yeah.
And somehow survived and comes back for the sequel. Which I think, because there's two direct-to-video
sequels.
Is he all
burned and
no, not at all.
Flesh masks.
I think they mentioned in the second one that he had skin grafts to fix. Skin grafts so good that he looks just like... he did in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty fantastic.
Wow.
But I think they, there's, like I said, there's
he's
two...
not in Die, Dark Man, Die?
No, he's not. No, Jeff Fahey is in Die, Dark Man, Die.
Wait, who plays... wow.
Yeah.
Who plays...
Lawnmower Man?
Yeah. A young Jeff Fahey.
Wait, plays...
no, he plays the bad guy, not Durant.
Who plays Dark... oh, it's Arnold Vosloo.
It's Vosloo, yeah.
From
he plays
Mummy.
Bane Wesley, yes.
He's the...
in those Dark two, he is Dark Man in those. Not as good. I'm pretty sure... I mean...
I think maybe I saw the second one a long-ass time ago.
There's that one where he's, there becomes a romantic story about he falls in love with... no, that's the third one. He falls in love with Jeff Fahey's wife, and then at some point he perfects the skin, but then...
I would hope.
He does. He comes up with permanent skin, but then everything's destroyed, and he's only got, like, a small vial of it to fix his face. But then the woman he loved, her daughter, gets disfigured as they're fighting the bad guy at the end. That's not for you. You want that one?
Sure. Yeah,
there you go.
Well, you say fix the skin. What are we talking about here when we say he's got to fix? What are we talking about?
Like his experiment?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, his whole purpose is to try and come up with a synthetic skin that lasts. I mean, he finds out the problem is that it doesn't last in the daylight. So his whole thing is to try and figure out.
99 minutes.
99 minutes.
Exactly. I love that stuff in science fiction.
Yeah. 90, yeah. Why 99 minutes? It
99
sounds good.
Minutes and
99
then it
minutes.
Melts.
Looks good. Yeah. And then it melts. So they're trying to figure out how to do that. And so he's still going throughout the movie trying to figure that out. But when he's trying to infiltrate Durant's gang, he's able to make masks of his of the members of his crew, infiltrate to steal money, I'm guessing, to buy more equipment and to make – I guess that's his ultimate goal.
I suppose.
Right? Mm-hmm. That's also not clear why.
He's just getting revenge for them killing him.
Right, I guess so.
Because
then he can steal
he's
it.
He's got this – well, they say that he – because, you know, he doesn't – he can't feel anything, then his emotions are getting the better of him, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And he's also got unchecked adrenaline.
Yes.
Running through his mm-hmm. system, which
that's why
makes
he's
him
so strong.
Super strong.
That comes into play in the third sequel.
Well, I would hope so.
They try and steal his dark man-ness. And put it into other people, make soldiers.
So is his superpower that he can make, you know, flesh masks of anybody? And
he's that's
really
one of his superpowers,
too.
But he's also very strong.
And he gets those, like, seizure-like Hulk out.
Yeah, and he does Hulk out. Take the fucking elephant.
Yeah.
I got the elephant.
Take the fucking elephant.
Take it. Which was always...
also got a big laugh.
Yeah. Which was always take the fuzzy elephant in the USA.
Oh,
take
God.
The fuzzy elephant.
Which
was, so when I first saw this movie uncut, I was just like, whoa. What?
Mm-hmm. He's like he's much like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future, where like you know how he, like if you call him chicken, he like freaks out.
Yeah,
you know? Like this guy Darkman, it's like if you call him a freak or like a circus freak or anything like that, he like seizures out. It's not just he gets mad; he like seizures like a rage seizure.
Yeah, his psyche is cracking. Yeah. Yeah. It shows like puppets and everything. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's done through like old timey montage or whatever.
Yeah,
it's not montage.
It's like, no, but it's like flashbacks and cut-ins. Everything superimposed
images of clocks and all this stuff flying
like weird puppets and shit,
which
yeah.
is all which is actually deleted stuff that they filmed for the actual movie. Like it's those were cool. supposed to be scenes. There's a part where he's like got his head in like a puppet thing where he's kind of just dancing around, which was actually part of the movie at one point.
That's amazing.
It's yeah, like, it's creepy.
It's like Dolly vision. It's like weird. Everything becomes a Salvador Dolly paint.
Yeah. Basically, yeah.
for like a brief second,
for like a second, yeah, it's gone.
It's weird when I saw that. I thought Raimi was doing like an homage to, because it feels, pardon me, more maybe because of you know, it's a mad scientist story. He's in a laboratory, you know, it, and there's, you know, storm clouds and lightning. It's like this is there, he's going after like a universal monster movie.
Yeah, aesthetic. Like The Change.
I suppose because it's a universal picture also. Yes. I'm always looking for that.
Sure.
We only saw that logo, what, three times before the movie started? Because there's the old one, and then there was the new one, and then there was the title card, too.
Yeah, that was their special 75th anniversary logo. Yeah. Like, look at our history. But yeah, so I'm struggling to remember a 30s Universal movie or anything from that era where you actually had all those superimposed things flying through. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like The Wizard of Oz, maybe, when she gets clocked on the head and during
the tornado,
the tornado sequence.
Yeah, a little bit.
That makes sense. But yeah, I can't really think of much else. Okay. I mean, always within a whirlwind, it always.
That's why I don't know why I was getting that vibe. Yeah. You know, if the vibe was just coming from the aesthetic of the movie, or if it was like, oh, he's doing like a homage back to old.
I'm sure it's some. I mean, filmmakers like Raimi, I'm sure, know something that we don't. Like fucking Tarantino has just a litany of old movies that he's seen that he's pulling things from and putting into his movies. Some things that, you know, we haven't heard of. I'm sure there's plenty of that Raimi's doing, just pulling it out. And it's like, this is an homage to this. And like, I've never heard of that movie. Thank you, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's doing something like that.
And his editors working in footage from Lucio Fulci's The Beyond into Spider-Man. It's a fantastic comic.
I'm sure there's a bit of this in Spider-Man as well.
Is there?
Like, yeah, because this is, I mean, it's like showing like the inner nerves of like inside his body, like kind of reacting and going crazy. Yeah. That's the point of these, is just kind of, it's like diving in, showing the circuits lighting up and him going crazy. That also shows up in Spider-Man at some point.
All right, so at some point, Sam Raimi had a very distinct visual style, right?
Yeah.
Which is very present in this movie. I mean, obviously, anybody who's seen the Evil Dead movies, you know, is
he likes a whip zoom. He likes to zoom in real quick.
Well, he did that one at the very beginning. I think it was the first, like, showy camera move that he did was Durant is facing off against this other gangster, or, you know, whatever.
Eddie band. Black.
Right. And that's right. And we established that he was from crap. I can't even remember what the movie was now. It was.
You said.
It wasn't Lord of Illusions, right?
It wasn't, because I'm seeing him as the guy with all the knives in him, but that's not it.
What was
it's
the first,
Prince of Darkness.
What was he was the first line of Darkness. Movie?
Oh, this movie is the best opening line ever. Because he's an asshole.
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah, and if he doesn't like that, then tell him, fuck you.
Yeah. And if you don't like that, which I can already see you don't, we'll cut your balls off. That's Eddie Black.
But when he's facing off with him, like Eddie Black's got like, I got three, you hear my three principles. And so on each one, when Sam Raimi cuts back to Durant, there's like this push in, but it doesn't go all the way up. Like the first one, you know, is like
a little bit.
And then back to Eddie Black.
Number two.
Then up to Durant again. I was like, number three. That's a Sam Raimi movie right there. Mm-hmm. Everybody else would just do the one slow push in, and you just cut back and forth. This one has like push in, stop. Push in, closer, stop. And then the last one's like almost going up the guy's nose.
And then he does it backwards.
Yeah.
He's cutting his fingers off. And then he does it to Eddie Black going in.
Oh, that's planning right there. Nice.
He's got it.
They don't just make these things up.
No.
They plan them out.
They know what they're doing.
And lots of Dutch angles where you actually see the camera move into the Dutch angle instead of just cutting to it. Like a lot of fast moving ones too.
He did one where he like focused. There was a focusing thing where it like went into focus. If you can understand from that.
This means we're
turning. It wasn't just
that's,
a, yeah.
That's the universal focus.
Into
focus. Sound.
Right, that's, we have our sound effects.
Into focus.
What was it? The 90s logos were.
Yep. Yeah.
Everybody knows what they mean.
Yeah.
But sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, he did a funny one later, too, where I think they're in the lab when they're beating up Peyton, and they've got his lab assistant wrapped in the plastic, and they shove him into frame and then bring him back out.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
Well, when they're beating up Liam Neeson, and you know, it's like he's putting the guy's head through the air, Liam Neeson's head through the glass.
Right.
He's got a set of cabinets, and it's like through glass number one. The camera's behind the cabinet, like moving along, tracking. And then there'd be those moments, where you know, like one character would suddenly appear in a shot, or the camera would move to reveal somebody's in the shot, then swing the other way. And, you know,
he has a very active camera in the way he shoots.
I would almost describe it as like a. It's like. It gives the sense of like a zany, right? Is zany a good word
I
to
feel,
describe like the mood of a early Sam Raimi?
Yeah, yes,
definitely.
I would think so.
Does that play at odds against the subject matter of the movie?
I think it might a little bit in this one. To me, I think it feels like it does because it feels I can't tell if like the subject matter is. Ended up being more serious as compared to his camera work. Maybe not as zany as you would think it is, but it feels...
Because it's a tragedy, basically,
right.
The story.
And
right?
There's a love story and everything in it. Like, it doesn't quite fit together for me. I mean, I like the movie, but it doesn't... Like, that kind of feels a little off. It does feel like they were, cutting away at this movie or, like, things were changing on the go for this.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like some of that stuff. I mean, the idea that one of Durant's henchmen has a wooden leg, right? Uh-huh. And then that leg ends up being a machine gun that they can pull off. And, you know, so what does the guy do while his leg, you know, where his compatriots are mowing down the bad guy or the other gang?
Yeah.
He's hopping around on one leg.
I mean, it makes sense because you had to sneak a gun in.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense at any point later in the movie.
No, because like, then you just see, like, everybody, you know, it's like, who's in my apartment, when, you know, coming to get me? There's a guy holding this gun leg, and then it pans over, and then there's the other guy glaring at the camera, and then he hops.
Right.
Because he doesn't have a leg.
Yeah. Right.
It's great as far as, like, setting up characters to remember. I mean, especially henchmen that you're not going to give a lot of backstory to. It gives them, like, just one identifying characteristic. I mean, even the name, Smiley, is the guy who's got the crazy smile.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who's got the leg that's a gun, the bald guy. Like, they have at least one characteristic that will differentiate them so that you know who they are. And they're not just all melding together into faceless bad guys, which it works for that. And his camera style works, like, in the scene where they first go to the lab and beat up Peyton. Like, it works for that in the introduction when everybody starts coming in. Like, you're talking about the Dutch angles when everybody starts walking in, the light being lit from underneath as they show everyone coming in. Like, his camera work works for scenes like that, I think, very well.
I feel like it kind of mirrored, like, comic book panels, which, that's what this is a comic book movie.
Yeah.
So it makes sense in that essence, but it was hard to tell the feel of the movie.
Yeah.
It really was. Like, I couldn't tell if it was serious or if
what
it was comedic.
What tone he really wanted to get.
Yeah, it definitely worked if you're trying to pull that comic book panel feel across.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the feel of the movie, you can't necessarily translate comic to movie in that aspect as far as, like, photography. It just... It doesn't translate as well.
Yeah. With story that happens later on.
Yeah.
Certain things don't mesh well. It's like, you get this here, and like, oh, now we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels a little weird.
Yeah.
Do you think Robert Rodriguez really likes this movie, and that's where he got the idea for the machine gun leg in Planet Terror?
I'd say it's possible.
I'm going to say yes.
It's possible.
I'm going to say yes. Because that's just a memorable thing. Yes.
Yeah. Machine gun leg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Machine gun leg.
Well, thanks, everybody. It was good talking to you.
Well, there was something you said that, like, triggered, and I can't remember.
I triggered you. I'm sorry. I triggered you.
Oh, no.
I didn't mean to.
Triggered a thought. Mm. In the old version of triggered.
Wooden legs, camera work.
Mm-hmm. Comics.
Comic panels.
Nope, it's not coming back.
All right,
Dutch
all right.
angles.
Suddenly it'll be there.
Lab assistants, fuzzy pink elephants.
Whiskers the cat.
Whiskers the cat.
Yeah, no, he has a cat to keep him company.
He does. It's Church from Pet Sematary.
Yeah, is it?
When did that come out? Yeah, I was going to say, let's look at it. I mean, again, oh, shit. I'm right here.
89.
Oh, 89. Perfect. That's the cat.
Probably the same
That's
cat.
That's the cat.
It has to be.
Oh, another chapter in. This is probably going to be the biggest chapter cats of film.
Yeah.
Just because.
Because but, it's us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll add that to it. We now have Church as our. We got monkeys, the mice, the scorpions. Definitely scorpions.
Oh, yeah.
And now cats.
You're going to have to go deep cuts back a couple episodes to get the entire
joke on that one.
Yeah.
I was hoping he'd go on Mike Tyson with those pigeons and like keep them as his friends and
right.
Yeah, because like it was nothing. So dramatic how they like flew up and then that was it. That's all they was there for.
I'm trying to think if there was kind of a side plot in either of the other two because he's a very lonely man. Did he keep a pet? Did he have a dog at one point? He may have had a dog that he just talks to angrily at some points.
Aww.
He's much calmer in the other two movies, which I don't like. He's really crazy in this one comparatively, especially when he does that. See the dancing freak.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He does that little
with
dance.
With the fucking funnel on top of his head. That was great.
Yeah.
And it comes like out of nowhere. But yeah, I mean, it's just his frustration.
But
right?
He's been triggered again. Well, just call him triggered at this point.
Yeah.
He's been triggered again, so he's kind of freaking out. And he's got to calm himself down.
Well, he's got reason to because his girlfriend is now taking up with. Okay, so here's a question. Well, so Holly, this was your first time seeing
it was.
The movie.
Oh,
I mean, based on. I'm just curious the way the plot works out because we're introduced to the villain of the movie, Durant.
He's the villain. All right.
One
of two.
He's
the main one to start
off.
I'm
driving towards. Like, the villain, I suppose, is the guy who dies at the end of the movie. But we're introduced at the beginning of the movie to the heavy, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Of the movie. And then you're introduced to, it's not her boss, right? She's a lawyer. Yeah, she works for Strax, right? The developer.
I think she works for a company that works for Strax. Okay. She's a lawyer.
She's probably working for something.
She has uncovered a memo.
Yes.
The Belisarius memorandum.
I'm glad you remember that because I was going, what the fuck was it called?
It was a memorandum because we heard it like 8,000 times.
Yes, the Belisarius memorandum.
And it details some type of financial transactions.
Yeah.
Right, that shouldn't have been going on.
Off.
So the question is, when you meet him, and he's basically making these veiled threats at her, but it's done, the actor delivers it in a way that's kind of like, I'm trying to help you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's this other guy who's a competitor for our business who, you know, his name's Durant. We've met him already in the movie, so we know what they're talking about. I'm curious if the movie, the structure of it works to hide the fact that he is actually the main villain of the movie, or based on the way that movie plots go, where you like, right at the very beginning when you saw him, you're like, that's the actual bad guy.
Oh, yeah, right away.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's just, so we just expect that now, right?
I think we can, but also I think we can tell, like, I mean, this movie
when
came out of the
90s. Williams shows up in the Phantom. Yeah, okay.
But I think that's the thing. Like, you can, it's a movie from the 90s. It's kind of in that vein. Like, you can kind of figure what's happening at this point. Like, a lot of these movies kind of shared certain traits. So we're kind of looking for that already. But like, all right, we know it's a 90s movie. It's superhero-ish. Something more is going on. So if they introduce that character, odds are something's going to happen with him and he's going to be a bad guy.
I didn't fully understand because he's developing this like
Delta City, yes.
Yeah, right? they act like it's this horrible thing and I don't know why.
They act like it's like, what he's
who,
doing.
Who does?
Like, I got the impression that we're supposed to not want him to build it and I didn't really understand why.
Okay, this is a bit of a reach because I'm having to read between the lines a lot here on this.
All right, yeah.
I think it's because if he builds this weird future city, right?
Right.
It brings in more of the mob people and they can, like, take over the city. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like, just like Delta City.
Like,
like they can just install the mob people as they're building the city. Like,
plus,
so
there's
going to
be all those workers.
There.
And you got to entertain the workers and they're going
to
need, you know, the drugs and prostitutes and all that.
Do we know this for sure?
But I'm sure he makes a lot of money building the city.
That's what they said. RoboCop, it seems like it applies here.
It seems like it shares some qualities.
All right. I don't know. feel like it wouldn't have been terrible if the city was built.
I know. Again, that's where the story kind of falls off at certain points. It's just like this vagueness. It's just like, what are our stakes here, really?
I was like, I don't really understand. Like, he bribes some people. I know that's shady, but it happens, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's like we're building a city that's supposed to be a good thing, right?
And then I was like, is Darkman supposed to be getting...
Darkman.
Is Darkman supposed to be, like, wanting revenge, or is he just wanting to finish his research and get skin?
He wants revenge for being blown up, but...
I think he wants.
I wish his name was like John Darkman. Yeah. That would have been better.
Yeah. John J.
Darkman.
John J. Darkman.
John J. Darkman.
John J. Darkman.
Only if I think the only reason I'm thinking that it's revenge is because the first time when he sees Rick, the Ted Raimi character, that's when he has his first like his colored freak out, light freak out.
Yeah.
Seizure.
Yeah.
It's,
so it's like
his rage seizure.
It's a rage seizure. Right.
And it's great the way he does that, because it really is just colored lights and zoom ins and Dutch angles and everything. Like, that's how he gets it across.
Well,
you do go back to more of the like going inside his head and seeing the freak out, but you do get a lot of that just practically right there on camera. Just turn on the red light, zoom in.
And it does help if you have bombastic Danny Elfman score.
Danny Elfman. We haven't even mentioned that at this point. Like, he wanted to make a superhero movie so much, he's like, I need Elfman,
because he did
that
Batman.
Fucking Batman movie.
Yeah. And he did the Flash TV show, so he's the superhero guy.
He is at
this point in time. Right. Yeah.
And man, the xylophones are everywhere in this movie. You can tell from the get-go.
What happened to Danny Elfman, too? Like, you listen to any of his newer stuff, it sounds
like any music
that anybody does. Like, he has lost that Danny Elfman.
Maybe. Or people don't want it.
Or he did it as much as he... Like, now he's like, I got to do something. Like, I'm growing as an artist.
There's also that. Like, he doesn't want to do it forever. And he's like,
I kind of like that he's
score.
Changing his stuff up. Like, I love when I see a movie and I see a music by Danny Elfman. I'm like, really?
Right.
Awesome.
Someone recently was just like, Danny Elfman did the score?
Yeah.
All right.
I thought that, what was I watching?
It's surprising.
Fuck. It was like Silver Linings Playbook or something. I think he did the music for it. Yeah. And I was like, really? Huh. What?
Weird.
Yeah, it was really crazy.
Yeah.
He didn't do...
Especially because David O. Russell leans on like scores so much. He leans on soundtrack so much. Like,
which
soundtracks are always...
Which, there was a lot of soundtrack in the movie, so it wasn't a ton of score, but what it was, I was like, I didn't know that was Danny Elfman.
Man, David O. Russell hits those music cues so literally.
He does.
Almost uncomfortable sometimes. It's almost Suicide Squad level, like... we're literally narrating what's happening on the screen with the music right now.
Right?
Like,
sometimes that bugs me.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, I know Elfman still does all of Tim Burton's movies, right? But like,
yeah, he does.
I mean, I couldn't tell you what the theme to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory sounds like.
Right.
But, you know.
The music in that sucked. So
Big Eyes didn't have great music either.
Yeah.
And that's more recent even still. And that's,
But I remember distinctly like Sleepy Hollow or, I suppose this, but it's not Tim Burton.
This was basically just like Batman Returns.
Basically,
like,
yeah. So it's just like Batman
Returns. The music
Returns.
Was almost identical.
Mm-hmm. Basically.
Yeah.
Which is all right.
Yeah. He did Spider-Man too, didn't he?
Yeah.
The first one?
So.
Yeah.
I think so. I'm looking it up as we speak because I wanted to figure out what was I just saw.
What did it watch? He threw me. I saw one. Oh, it was Wanted.
Really?
Sorry.
Oh, he did Wanted?
He did Wanted, the music for Wanted.
Yeah.
And he sings the title song in that.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Threw me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, amazing. Look it up.
Just by himself, not Oingo Boingo.
Yeah, it's just him.
Yeah.
He wrote the Desperate Housewives theme. That's there surprising. You go.
Yeah.
What?
Oh. Well, the... so in Darkman, Darkman evolves into an action movie. This is years before Taken. This was Liam Neeson. Hot off of the success of Krull.
Totally.
Yep.
We all saw that.
Right? Where he has a bit part in
the
that
infamous
movie.
Krull.
You could tell right then, this guy is going to be a Darkman. So it's it turns into an action movie. So this is
so
the
mostly
biggest
his
thing.
Stuntman.
Right.
I would say less Liam Neeson.
So how do 90s stunt work, or how does it hold up under, you know, today's...
I mean, you can see all the seams in this movie. I mean, you can see all the green screen. Like, it all is definitely noticeable
blue
in this movie.
Before digital.
Blue screen, because the color matters.
Yeah. Well, the because you can definitely see matte lines.
Yeah, you see matte lines. You can see the cut to, especially during the helicopter dangling scene. Mm-hmm. You get somebody was actually out there dangling from a helicopter going through a city and everything. But when they cut up to Liam Neeson at that point, it's just, you know, from shoulders to the top of the head. And you can see that there's just like rear projection going on behind him, or some blue screen or something.
There's some really weird angles where like he was supposed to drop out of the helicopter and then catch onto the hook.
Yeah.
Where clearly he's standing on a blue screen and they're wiggling the hook.
Yeah.
And it's the backgrounds are moving differently and don't match. There's a lot of which surprised me for 1990s that there was stop motion animation.
There was.
And like, you know, or claymation or whatever for was going on with his hands.
Yeah, right, when they get injured. Shot. And when he's typing.
And he's typing, yeah.
It's just like a good hand in one and the other one's like the burnt
You can't
boy hand.
Do that makeup?
Maybe they wanted to show the bones.
I like that choice a lot.
I mean, I'm okay with it. It doesn't bug me that they did it, but I don't see why they couldn't do it, just makeup on hands and do the shot.
I think he wanted to actually show like the
intricacies of the burnt off hand and everything.
The skin, you know, and the ligaments and all that.
I guess. It seems like something in 1990 you should be able to pull off at that point.
I think it's a stylistic choice. I mean, that's Sam Raimi's.
This is very true. You know? He might have done this on purpose. Be like, oh, this is what I want. This is what I like. I mean, he's done it. He did it before Evil Dead movies and whatnot. A ton. Yeah. So I
hate this. Comfortable with it, or I mean, it's
something he likes.
Again, I think this it contributes to like the Sam Raimi style of of that era, because this is before Army of Darkness, even, right? Because that was 93.
Yeah, this was right before Army of Darkness, yes.
Yeah, this got him in with Universal, and then they were able to get the rights to do Army of Darkness or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, maybe it contributes to that overall, you know, Sam Raimi-ness, which isn't really, you know, like, keep moaning. There's no Danny Elfman anymore, and there's no Sam Raimi anymore. And until he did the Evil Dead, Ash versus Evil Dead pilot. That felt more like old school Sam Raimi.
Is Drag Me to Hell? Did that feel Sam Raimi? No,
not at all.
In moments, like the
so it's just kind of
seance scene
off.
And whatever with the talking goat or whatever that came out of nowhere. Is like, that's a Sam Raimi. Who else would have thought to do, you know?
Right.
And when the Lamia is like trying to get into her house or whatever.
You think people don't want that aesthetic anymore?
That movie didn't do well. Yeah.
Drag Me to Hell?
Yeah.
People like that movie a lot.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
But people...
we have conflicting opinions.
All right, go. All right, let's hear it.
But the I guess, you know, it's interesting to see a filmmaker do, you know, something that defines, like, their style. I mean, that's what makes a movie by them special, right? It's like you're going to get something that they do that nobody else does. And somehow, both Tim Burton and Sam Raimi, it's ironic that we're talking about both of them in this era and then where they eventually went to, you know, I mean, they eventually evolved into doing these big budget CGI spectacular Disney movies.
They almost like, ended up at the same place.
Yeah. They could have, you could switch. Like you told me,
wouldn't be able to tell.
Sam Raimi directed Alice in Wonderland and Tim Burton directed Oz the Great and Powerful.
I'd be like,
how would you tell them apart?
Yeah.
They're like the same goddamn movie.
It's funny that they start out basically the same thing with their superhero movies and just end up there.
They have parallel careers.
I guess so. And now.
We're waiting for the Sam Raimi, Tim Burton team up, which might never happen.
That'll never happen.
No.
What's Tim Burton doing now?
Another Alice in Wonderland. I don't know. Wasn't there a sequel to that?
Yeah, he didn't direct that.
It came out last year.
Oh, he didn't?
He didn't direct that one, though. Probably produced it, but he didn't direct it. No.
The last thing I saw was Big Eyes, and I came out like
at least Sam Raimi's doing a TV show, or at least producing a TV show.
Yeah, I think he just did that first episode, though.
I'm sure he's executive producer on it.
Tim Burton just did something that we're not thinking of that came out really recently. I think post Big Eyes.
Frank and Weenie?
I think so. No, a lot more recent than that.
It was the Peculiar Children.
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, that was it. Yeah.
The Miss Pettigrew's pedophile.
Got it. It went in a very dark place because we're watching a Darkman movie.
Darkman.
Read the book. I think it's Pettigrew.
I mean, I'll go with whatever you say. Like Chico, right?
That was Carlito.
Yeah, Carlito. That's what it was. Yeah.
You believed me for a while.
No one believed you, Holly.
Yeah, you did.
No, we didn't.
All right, so what else we got about Darkman here?
I've seen the movie.
It was Peregrine,
right?
Which is amazing.
That's very true. Oh, yeah. All right. Describe this as two people who have not seen this before. So, you guys seem very happy with that ending.
You hadn't seen Darkman before? Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I thought it was just...
No, I had not seen this before. Right.
Wow.
So after a weird high-rise building fight, which I think is a trope of the 80s and 90s as well, that right. like on a half-built building, you know, on the
Lethal
iron beams.
Weapon
yeah.
3, right? The building was...
Well, even Power Rangers did that. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers had a fight like that, too.
In the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the first big fight scene after they meet Ivan Ooze. Yeah. I haven't watched it recently.
Yeah.
Stop looking at me like that, Colin.
Yeah. You guys, even 3 Minute a Baby had a fight in a half-built building.
You mean the movie that's haunted?
That's right. That's right.
The movie that at one point in time was the most rented movie of all time.
You're
because
goddamn
of that.
Right it was. Yeah. Gutenberg bitches.
Anyways.
Gutenberg bitches.
Short Circuit was on TV the other day, and I watched
it. That's a great movie.
I have that movie.
Fisher Stevens is uncomfortable to look back on in that movie,
not until like within the past like 5 years did I put it together. Yeah. That was I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Mm-hmm. He did that?
Yep.
That's online with what is it? Breakfast? No.
Yeah.
What? Was it Breakfast at Tiffany's with what's his name? Andy Rooney?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mickey Rooney.
Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. So we go up in a building for the climactic fight.
Oh, yeah.
In the skyscrapers.
Yeah.
Mm. The skyscrapers. The steel girders.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then
they have Frances held hostage. Or Julie.
Julie, yes.
Yeah. Sorry.
I mean, she is both.
Her real name is Frances. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have her held hostage.
Random bloke up there as well.
Yeah. You have the typical villain explaining his whole, you know, master plan.
Yep.
Yes.
Scenario.
No, but does he?
He basically
describes what his. I mean, what we already know he's been doing, and he describes his childhood at this point. I steal. And he's just.
It was his version of. It was his version of saying, "I have the high ground, Anakin."
Basically,
him saying, "I was a kid and I used to climb these things and bullshit like that."
Claims he's God because he's like, look at this. I built this all. This is mine.
And you're not going to kill me. Basically.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
why?
I don't know why you antagonize people who are there
you're
to kill
like
you.
You're not like me.
Right. Who
you're
are you looking at right
me.
Now? You see how this guy looks? He'll kill you.
Yeah.
But I do like, that is something I do like about the ending, though. It's like, it's not something you can live with. And then he drops and is like, I'm learning to live with a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I've always liked that.
There's a lot of cheeseball lines in that movie, but that was a good line.
But there's some good lines in this movie. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cheeseball stuff, but there's some good lines in this movie. I like that and the ending that you two can describe.
And then what, Julie? Is that what her name is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so she's
Julie.
Like, let's you know, spend more time
Julie.
Together. Let's build our life up to what it was. And then he says, Peyton's dead or something, right? Something like that. And then, like, storms off and you see him, like, pull out this, like, flesh mask with dark hair, which flesh is not mask. One we've seen before.
No.
And it's new.
And the hair looked very long when he whipped it out.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. And he's taking off and he's running down the streets and you hear this voiceover about how, like, I am everywhere and I am everyone. And then, you know, she's chasing him, like, pulling guys' coats around to look to see
if
she can
find him. You're wearing a trench coat.
Yeah. Everyone in this town wears trench
coats
all the time.
Nowhere. Yeah.
And then we cut to, we see the Bruce Campbell of all people turn around and kind of like straighten out the flesh mask and look at the camera and then keep walking. And I fucking love that ending. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I knew there was going to be Bruce Campbell in here somewhere because every Sam Raimi movie has at least a cameo by him, if nothing
else.
So
he wanted him to be Peyton for this, but they didn't want to put the movie on his shoulders.
Bigger. Because at that time, Bruce Campbell wasn't the Bruce Campbell.
Right, yeah.
But I think maybe he had done... Well, I mean, obviously the Evil Dead movies, but I think The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. But I don't think that was a big hit. But everybody that I know like seems to have seen that fucking show.
Yeah.
But I don't think when it was on at the time, it was a big deal.
I don't
deal.
Think so.
Well, it didn't get renewed. So.
Yeah.
No.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone
it was one
like,
season.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
And I think everybody just saw the promos for the show and just never watched it.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I watched it, but I was pretty young. I was pretty young, so.
I don't know if I watched it. I don't think I did.
Because where did Bruce Campbell... Yeah, I mean, eventually just the cult of Evil Dead caught up with him, right? Enough that they said, okay, we'll put him in, you know, Army of Darkness, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was like Burn Notice or something by the time he actually got like a legitimate, you know, something other than Evil Dead that he could hang his hat on. So then after that, he's like, I can go back to Evil Dead.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Look, they won.
I've satisfied myself that I can do other things.
Apparently.
No. Well,
and I did Bubba Hotep. Bubba Hotep. Yeah. Yeah.
Give them what they want.
Wrote a couple books.
Yeah.
He's very happy.
Played a Major D. Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, so yeah.
He was a ringmaster.
And a theater. And a theater, yeah. Theater
usher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I help you? It's pretty good.
Are we forgetting anything about, before we approach the mailbag and the wrap-up segment of our show, are we forgetting anything that you want to bring out or talk to or highlight specifically about the movie Darkman?
I don't think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I have a question. Okay. So they said that he burned 40% of his body.
No.
We only really see that his face and like neck and hands are fucked up. That mm-hmm. doesn't seem like 40% to me. But
I'm sure there's
like I'm sure it's
it'd be great if like
whatever.
That was it. Like yeah. from here down, perfect.
Yeah. Well,
perfect.
Yeah, of course, yeah. when you see like you know up his sleeve,
right.
you yeah. can see his skin. Mm-hmm. It's just he's wearing right.
the
yeah.
For a guy that was like completely on fire and got shot hundreds of feet into the air, he should be like completely burned head
You'd
to toe.
You think so?
But so if he was completely burned head to toe, and then you know he has to like. 3D print his whole body, right? Uh-huh. So would he have to have like a naked picture of him his whole body do that? Because we see the way he 3D prints is like it scans a photo of his face and like because there's a scratch over one side of his face in the right. photo, he can't read that. So like so, would he have to have like a full on naked
Oh no,
picture
this is
of
where
himself?
The this is where the comedy comes in. He's like, all I have is a picture of a black guy. What do I do now?
Oh, I like this.
Yeah, he's like, all right, joke. I can deal yeah. with this. Yeah. This is great.
Yeah.
See, this is
this, why is this not in the movie?
Why was this not explored? This is, they had two sequels to try and explore this.
Yeah.
Why didn't we do
because
it?
Because Roger Corman didn't make the movie. Roger
I mean,
Corman
I guess
did.
So. It's yeah, very
I would have
true.
Watched God,
the
I would, that
the
great.
Mel Brooks version.
Funny.
Of, where's Mel Brooks' superhero movie? Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's where
yes.
it would have gone.
Someone yeah. get Mel before he dies.
I was just kind of curious how he could put the mask over his bandages and all
it was
that.
Loose fitting. He just kind of
it was it was Liam Neeson, but he was able to pull the Liam Neeson mask off and he had bandages underneath.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, because mm-hmm. he whipped it off at one point, and I'm like
on the helicopter.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
I was figuring because he's so gaunt, and basically half of his skull is showing that when you pull the you mask go. Over, it'd be form fitting, and boom, that's your skin again.
Yeah,
but he's got bandages over the skull and the mask over that. Mm. He also at one point was dressed up as Durant or somebody,
yes,
and pulled Durant's coat off, and he had his cloak. Under
he
that.
Did. Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I think
fully
he put the fucking
underneath.
Hat on, and it was like, where the hell were you carrying that?
Yeah,
you don't.
Oh
question.
Yeah, he also had that face in there for that whole time.
The cloak he found in a dumpster at the beginning of the movie and decided mm-hmm. to
it's just
keep
like,
wearing
I like
through
this.
The whole movie.
I'm gonna keep it.
Why, where great. Else do you find I think the crow does the exact same thing.
Yeah,
no,
does.
He takes T-Bird or Fun Boy's coat or something like that.
Yeah. Point is, he's fully dressed. He doesn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He doesn't need the coat.
Yeah.
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 Where does he keep the hat?
I mean, he didn't have the hat later on.
Hey, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, the last time we... Okay. No, he never pulled it out and stuck it on, Colin. That never happened in this
From
movie.
From that, you know, holster that you have in
right.
your back.
Yeah. He's just like...
Hold swords and hats. Reach back there and boom.
Do we ever see how he got the hat? Or did the hat just, like, pop into existence in this movie? Like,
I feel like the hat just popped into existence.
Yeah. Why didn't we not get a great, like, Indiana Jones type scene of it blowing down the street? Or Seinfeld. Seinfeld type scene blowing down
yeah!
the street.
Yeah!
And you see him reach down and then, like, pick it up and put it on. Yeah. It's like the look is complete, you know? Yeah.
Oh, that would have been good. Like the
maybe pimp coat.
Like the pimp coat
cane.
Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a great episode. Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
The cat should have brought it to him. He's like, meow.
Whiskers found the cat.
He should have named maybe. The fucking cat.
It's yeah. Whiskers.
Yeah. Whiskers.
All right. Okay, so you've listened to us prattle on long enough about Darkman, but we want you to stick around because we're going to answer some mail, and then we're going to go around the table, and each one of us will review Darkman. Who liked it? Who didn't? We're going to find out. You want to be here for that exciting portion of our show, but before then, we need to summon our mailman, Igor. Where are you, sir?
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Why, thank you, Igor.
Colin apologizes for last week, Igor. Did you say fuck Igor last week?
I
brought
I bet
him
his feelings.
Did you?
He still shows up.
Okay. Oh, did you? Okay. So he like forced his way into the show. You're like, fuck Igor. Igor's like, no, I must deliver mail.
Yeah. I should say, like, Igor, bring us the mail. Right? Okay. Well, anyway, so about Darkman. Oh, by the way, if you want to get a hold of us, and we hope that you do, you can get a hold of us on Facebook.
Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show.
On Twitter.
@SatFreakShow.
Or you can email us.
SaturdayNightFreakShow@Yahoo.com.
And we'll read your comments on the air. You want to tell us about something that we did a long time ago? One of our old shows that you just listened to?
Please do.
Tell us about that, too. So for Darkman, Ryan Burritt writes in and says, I watched it maybe a year ago and thought it still held up pretty well.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
For our Ghost in the Shell episode.
Oh, God.
Uh-oh.
They haven't heard it yet.
You might regret this.
Yeah. On Twitter, Movie Guru writes in and says, rewatching the original Ghost in the Shell, the Major seemed to want to connect to being a human more. Versus in Standalone Complex, that's the second one, where she was all internet. I expect the new movie to be scene for scene, but less interesting or cinematic. Mm. I think that's what he's going for. Like maybe what we tried to articulate, that by the end of that movie, she just wants to, or I think the AI and her, they just want to be human and die.
I don't know, Colin.
We don't know anymore.
Okay.
But the fact that the new one's going to be less interesting, I disagree with that. I don't. I think the new one will be more interesting. If nothing
it'll
else,
be more
the fact it's beautiful,
captivating.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Oh, that story they're giving her. Oh, they took your life. You had a family.
But that's something. They don't even give her that.
They don't. It doesn't make it good though. Just because they put
not
there.
Good. Just easier to watch.
Yeah, judging a movie before I've even seen it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. That's very true.
You are.
And about our rubber episode, Chris Huddleston.
Seaheads!
In French.
I hope you like that name.
I'm going to read you the translation.
All right.
Oh.
The translation is thank you for the surname, I think.
Did you just fall for Seaheads there? You just went,
yeah, because I think we called him Seaheads. So
I think he likes
thank
it.
You for the surname, Seaheads.
And he can speak French.
If you write in, we'll give you
more French films,
too.
Please.
Oh, no problem.
He signed it Seaheads.
Does Amelie count?
That's a French movie.
Is that a freak show movie?
Can we do La Haine?
I don't know if that's a freak
There's
show movie.
There's a lot of French extremist horror movies we can do.
Is a high tension.
Martyrs.
Martyrs.
We'll work on it, Seaheads.
Right.
Inside Frontiers.
Yeah.
French.
Bring the cinematic universe of Alexandre Aja.
Aja.
Oh, God.
Did we not do an Aja?
Aja.
I think we did one.
What about
we?
Eyes Without a Face?
Oh, yeah.
Eyes Without a Face. Yeah. That's a song, right?
Merci, Seaheads.
What about...
God.
Is Lars von Trier Dutch? He's not French, right?
He's Swedish? Danish.
Danish. So, Antichrist.
He was French. We'll do a lot of... I'm just going to bring some fucking whatchamacallit movies. What the fuck's his name? Doesn't work anymore.
Luc Besson?
No. The actor.
Gerard Depardieu.
Yes, I'm just going to bring a lot of Gerard Depardieu movies.
He had the greatest departure from acting, though, getting drunk and pissing himself on a plane and cursing at the flight attendants, and then never made a movie. Like, well, he's probably made some, but like no one gave a shit about his movies.
There was like one movie like within the past 10 years. I'm just like, oh, Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah, he had a
Hamlet.
He's making some movies.
With Kenneth Branagh, Hamlet?
Okay. Yeah, that's
my
good one.
Was he My Father the
so
Hero?
So he had like a full-on artist
Oh, yeah. He like was like swearing at the flight attendants.
I am Gerard Depardieu.
Yeah, and pissed himself on
the
plane.
I went on Asterix and Obelisk movies, but they only came out. They were like Luc Besson movies. They're based on a comic strip that's famous over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like two or three of them. Okay. All right, so now it's time for wrap-ups.
Colin!
Yes,
what'd you
Sean?
Think about Darkman?
Oh, Darkman. I think this, it comes off now. It's a little more quaint that I remember it. You know, I mean, it's been many years since I saw it in theater, then VHS, and then nothing until now. Until Sean brought the shiny new Scream Factory mm-hmm. Blu-ray with custom artwork on the video box.
Wait.
No, Sean's having a Vanna moment right now. Just okay. So you know.
I thought Bruce Campbell was on the cover for a second.
Right,
I was like, whoa.
Ghost
I was like, whoa. That's...
It's like Bruce Campbell is not in this movie.
Selling point.
Yes.
I respect that it does have that Sam Raimi, you know, I mean, what you like the early Sam Raimi stuff for is like that kind of maniac energy and offbeat sense of humor. Right, this has that. This is like it's a studio movie, but it still has enough of the Sam Raimi zest for, you know, the fact that I'm making movies and isn't it awesome? I mean, I seriously hear him talking in that voice in my head. I don't know. Yeah, it kind of does run a little counter to the subject matter of the movie, which, like I was saying earlier, it's a tragedy, right?
Yeah.
This is dark stuff. Yeah. There's a guy gets blown up. He's like, you know, can't use his hands, can't feel anything, loses the woman that he loves, you know, loses
cripples
his livelihood.
A carny.
All of his work is gone, can't control his rages. And like, yeah, what's he going to do after this? He's going to go star in a couple of sequels. I mean, they're going to make a superhero out of him because that's what you do with these poor, tormented, lonely men who live in the shadows and rescue comic books out of people from, I don't know. I don't know. Is his, like, the other movies, is it like, is he still in, like, a, you know, still trying to get revenge on the corporation that whatever?
I think in the other people? Two movies, they come looking for, or they find him. Like, he turns
into a
crime fighter. He's got
technology that they need. Yeah. Oh, is he actually,
it
like...
It feels like, from what I remember, it feels like he's
a
crime fighter.
In the
right.
alley, and I can intercede.
Like, he's out in the night, and for some reason, he stops people, and then
he's
ends
out
up,
in the night, or he is the night?
I mean...
He is the dark.
Yes.
He was born.
He's the dark.
It.
He is the
molded by
I
it.
Was born into it.
Yeah. Molded by it. Oh, I really want to do my Bane voice.
Perhaps he's wondering why you would shoot a man.
You have to
about throwing him out of a plane.
the guy he throws out of the plane in that movie, Bane, the guy, that's fucking Aiden Gillen, Littlefinger on Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
really?
Is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's weird because that was before he was like a Game of Thrones star.
Yeah. He'd done the Bourne, the second Bourne movie by then? Yeah.
The more you know.
There you go. I mean, that's why you listen to the Freak Show.
Yeah, right. For little
explosions of trivia, and you're like, now I know this stuff. Yeah. I don't know. Like, how deep can you go in this review? The writing is sometimes hokey, sometimes bad. Everything that Durant says, I see it written as, like, you know, this kind of arch villain. And the way he delivers it is kind of at sometimes running at odds to the way I hear it, you know, like how he not that he how he should have said it. I think he's saying it. He's acting it better than it's written every time. But the lines are like, whoa, which kind of, I guess, says something to the caliber of his acting.
You think he's acting
pulls
it
better?
Than what it is?
Yeah, because, I mean, I was hearing those lines as they're written on the page. I'm like, this is, like, boilerplate kind of dialogue that you give, you know, a lot of, one doesn't walk into a room without first looking into it, you know, whatever, right? And he's somehow able to, I thought he was able to sell it, or at least, you know, do it in a way that was like, yeah, okay, I'll buy that, you know, that take on it. Liam Neeson is, I think, trying to camouflage his Irish accent by basically growling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, which I think is like an actor technique.
High like this, yes.
Yeah.
Christian Bale does that too.
Bring your voice down a register or
but
whatever.
He didn't do that like in the beginning when he's just like scientist guy. It was after his accident.
He hits a couple of like hard, oh, you mean, yeah. Okay.
The growliness. Growling. Yeah.
Well, possibly. It's supposed to be he's angry. Right. Julie, take the fucking help.
Well, but even as like as Peyton Westlake, when he comes back, he's obviously scratchier. He's just kind of more up here and just.
Yeah.
So his voice does change, I think, because he was burned alive.
Yeah.
There's that.
I thought the action scenes now are a little bit. I mean, it's cool that they did these big thing, you know, with the big stunt work with the helicopters. Some of it was like, whoa, you're swinging this guy around between, you know, city buildings, skyscrapers. I noticed they closed the freeway. There's no cars on the road, you know, but at least they're doing all this stuff. And it's like, okay, but is it, you know, Raimi's not an action director, at least not at this point. I don't know that he ever actually has been like you know, that guy, what you do best is action staging.
No,
you know, and so it kind of what I think I would recommend the movie because it's of its little, you know, idiosyncrasies. But, you know, me personally watching it now, it was like, yeah, well, you know, it's like it's not a classic. Right. I mean, it I don't think it is necessarily aged well enough to, you know, but it's like a time capsule of where Sam Raimi is. So if you're a fan of Sam Raimi's work, then definitely I think you have to check it out. I don't know, comic book fans, I think you've got other stuff that you could probably go to, but I mean, I don't know. I liked it on all the viewings that I've had of it. So I'd say check it out.
I think this movie is better than its contemporaries, like The Phantom and The Shadow and those other weird, like bizarre scenery chewing superhero movies of the time. I think that it has all my favorite Sam Raimi elements. Like it's just crazy and wacky and weird and over the top. And it's interesting to see someone other than Bruce Campbell do that. Because that's all we really ever get to see is Bruce Campbell do all the weird stuff. So I think Liam Neeson, like his body acting in this was really cool because I like he's like lumbering and hunching
very
for a
hunchy.
Lot.
Very
yeah,
hunchy.
Very hunchy. Even when he's sitting, like even they even transferred it to other characters who were supposed to be him, just kind of.
Yeah.
He's really tall.
Yeah, he's a very tall man. You see him kneeling next to that taxi cab?
Yeah.
He could have picked that thing up and thrown it. He's a very tall man.
Yeah, he's very like lumbery.
He's very
hunchy
prodigious
and,
in all areas, I hear.
And he kind of like creeps around like when he's walking, like he hunches over. I'm sorry, I'm doing the motion, but
you're doing like a Scooby Doo.
Yeah, Scooby Doo kind of like creep. That's really entertaining to watch, and I think I think it's really interesting to see someone other than Bruce Campbell do like Sam Raimi's weird stuff. And I loved it because I love all the things that Sam Raimi does. But I think if this movie were directed by somebody else and written by somebody else, I would not really find it that interesting. I think the only reason I like it is because it's so stylistically Sam Raimi. If you're a Sam Raimi fan, definitely watch it. If like you're just like a comic book completist, like you're gonna be like, what's the point of this? But I mean, it's worth it for the fucking carnival scene alone. Like just the carnival scene, because you can tell like, oh no, like circus freak, circus. Yeah. He's like already feeling weird about himself.
It's disturbing imagery during that scene.
Oh yeah,
the laughing clowns.
Whatever that is,
just close ups of distorted like faces.
Yeah, even watching it now, it does something where it's just like, ugh.
Like you're watching
it,
it's like stop.
It's like I just saw The Devils not too long ago. It's like a Ken Russell movie. Like how you parade just a bunch of crazy stuff like around, you know, to offset the character's mental balance.
I really love the stop motion, and I thought like the makeup on Liam Neeson's face when like he has the bandages off with it looked really good. And I think that aged the best out of anything in this movie, especially like his teeth and like the way he had like no lips or anything. So it's just exposed teeth and gums, which was really comical at some points. But
yeah, it was.
But
Tony Gardner was the makeup.
Tony Gardner. Yeah.
But I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I think if you like Sam Raimi and his style, you'll definitely like it. Don't watch it on like psychedelics or anything, because God, I can't imagine that carnival scene if you're tripping. Like that would be like it already kind of feels like you are when you're sober watching
right.
this.
Yeah,
because you know. Get yelled at at one point, like he's a freak. You might just sit there going, I am freak. Yeah. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah, and all those weird like puppets that are popping up and stuff.
Nope.
It's like we're trying to describe it the best we can, but you really kind of have to see that scene to get it. And yeah, the whole meltdown over take the fucking fuzzy elf.
The fuzzy elephant.
It's weird because I feel like even though we see Liam Neeson in a lot of action movies now, we never see him like snap and get crazy like he does in this movie.
Yeah. No, he's always
now
very cold
he's very
when he's killing
just,
people.
I have a very particular skill.
Yeah, he's very reserved.
Now he's just like,
yeah, this movie, he's like fucking bonkers. So, I would recommend it.
Darkman.
Darkman.
Who is Darkman? So that was the ad campaign.
Right. Oh, yeah. I was like, Liam Neeson.
it's Liam Neeson. Right there.
Liam Neeson. Whole time it was him.
It's right there. He's on the poster.
Yeah. On the video box. You'll see it.
It's on the video art.
Darkman. I thought parts of this movie were kind of slow. Kind of hard to follow motivation for several of the characters. I really did not care for the romance. I did not buy it. I didn't feel the love. Maybe it was just...
She was shitty.
She was shitty. I was like, why are you in love with her? I don't understand. She's just kind of aloof about the whole relationship. So I didn't really buy that.
It was because he asked her to marry her and she said... I'll have to think about it.
No, that wasn't it. I understand having to think about something like that. Marriage, big decision. It was her in general. She was just kind of like, oh, marriage. I love you. I'll think about it. Like, and she didn't seem very... I didn't believe her. I didn't believe that she really loved him. And I didn't really believe the romance. So that left something. I thought...
Which ends up being a big part of the movie.
Yeah, that's a big part of the movie. I just didn't buy it. Yeah, the writing was kind of hokey in a lot of parts. There were some good lines. I wasn't crazy about Liam Neeson's performance. I mean, even though he, you know, did what he could with what he had, it was just, I don't know. I really care for it. But it was a kind of a lot of fun to watch. And it hit some 90s checkpoints that I love, like nunchucks, helicopters, hanging from helicopters, machine guns.
There's a 90s checklist.
The iron girder fight.
Yes, the iron girder fight.
Grenade launchers. Yeah. Because why bring a gun to a, you know, gun fight?
To a helicopter fight.
Yeah.
We brought a gun to a helicopter fight, yes. Yeah.
So it hit some really great 90s checkpoints. This I had a lot of fun watching this, but I had a lot of fun watching this with you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I will probably would have been bored out of my mind watching it alone.
Okay.
I will say
you
that.
You got to judge it on that.
Yeah. So I would say it's worth a watch. It's not really a necessity. But if you want to watch it with a group, it could be fun. I'll recommend it just because it was an interesting watch. I will give it 2 machine gun legs out of 5.
All right.
Well,
very good. Watching this again tonight, and I watched this probably 2 months ago when I ordered the Scream Factory Special Edition. I noticed that it is a weaker movie than I remember it being. I think that has a lot to do with kind of the age it comes from. It's definitely a product of the very early 80s. 90s, I mean. I'm sorry. The very early 90s. But there are elements of it that I do like. But it doesn't feel like a complete movie the more I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard one going back to it. It's still one I'll watch again. It might be a while before I do. Definitely make my way through. Like, for the special edition, there's a lot of interviews and commentaries and stuff like that. So it's
Get out. On a Blu-ray? No.
Are you making fun of me? Fuck you.
That was really bad.
Some of them don't. Some of them don't, Colin. But there's a lot of special stuff that goes a little deeper into the movie. There's some good, it's about about a half hour effects documentary on this movie, just talking about all the stuff they had to do, the stop motion, the makeup they had to put on Liam Neeson throughout the movie. The disc is interesting. The movie has its flaws. It's definitely a product of the 90s. The story is it's not complete to me. It always feels like something's missing. I think Michaela said, if it wasn't directed by Sam Raimi, it might be like maybe a direct-to-video thing. And it definitely wouldn't be something that is seen as much as, you know, Sam Raimi's Dark Man. So it being from Sam Raimi and him adding the elements that he's kind of famous for does help the movie. It makes it far more interesting. I recommend it because it's always I still enjoy watching this. Just, you know, you can, like I said before, you can see the problems with it, especially in effects areas. But at this point, I like that. It does date it, but, you know, it brings you back to a different time of watching movies. And I still appreciate that. It's still got some good lines in it, even though some are very cheesy. I like Liam Neeson. I like Larry Drake as the bad guy. They are kind of one-dimensional characters as you go along, but I think they're good enough for this movie. I definitely recommend it. I'll watch it again every now and again.
Every
I'll pop
so
this
often.
In. I do
Trivia
like this movie.
For you. Apparently I read somewhere that Universal freaked out because it was the lowest scoring movie I think they ever had at a test screening.
Yes, it was indeed.
But it was saved by the Who is Dark Man marketing.
Yes, good marketing for the movie. Yes.
Yeah. So everybody was like, who is Dark Man? I mean, I remember, you know, that was the – I may actually have a poster of Dark Man.
I give it 3 fuzzy fucking elephants out
Check
of 5.
Check the fucking elephant.
Check the fucking elephant out of 5. So
wow, that's like pretty high up there.
Maybe 2.5. 2.5 to 3. Like I'd say 3. All still right. I like
it. Like 2 big fuzzy elephants.
2
and one
very,
little one.
Very big and 1 little one, yes. there's some elephants in there. But yeah. Oh, I was going to say, did anybody see the trick in identifying Peyton when he was occupying some other character? Did you see the trick that the identifying trait that he had, that you could like pick him out from the people he was impersonating? Let me catch that. They do a lot of close-ups of this.
His eyes.
He's got very bright blue eyes.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
And none of the other characters did. So, and they do that. They do a lot of close-ups on his eyes when he's being other characters, so you can see the bright blue. Even in some scenes when he's being Durant, Larry Drake had to wear the blue contacts. Yeah. In order to pull off that he was Liam Neeson at that point. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I caught it viewing.
His little henchman started to catch on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only caught that watching it tonight. I'm like, oh, that's the eyes. Mm-hmm. He's got bright blue eyes and he's wearing contacts, especially in that close-up scene where he's smoking a cigar, you can see. So he's always got the blue contacts in when he's playing somebody else, when somebody else is playing him.
Now I gotta watch it again.
Again!
Right now!
No, we don't have to watch it.
We're not gonna watch it again.
All right. Well, later on we can watch it.
Oh, there you go. Next week, maybe after, Darkman 2 and 3. Sit down for one whole evening. Next week, we're going to be watching a movie that's chosen by...
I don't know. I don't
know. We're going to shout it out. Holly!
Holly!
All right.
What are we watching next week? I can't shout all the time, guys.
Why not?
It'll get old. They will get annoyed, and then it won't be a surprise anymore.
I'm not doing this
for another month.
Last time I did it, you got mad at me because I stole your thing.
I'm not saying you can do it. I'm saying I'm not going to. That doesn't mean one of you gets to replace me.
Oh, okay.
Nobody shouts for like a month.
Okay.
And then you'll all be surprised.
Next week, we're going to face a fear of mine from when I was a kid. You guys are going to help me through it. We're going to watch a movie that scared the hell out of me. We're going to watch 1988's Night of the Demons. All right.
Oh. Yeah. All right. Who was I just talking about this with?
Me. Us last week, probably.
Were we talking about it?
Drunken ghost in the show podcast.
Maybe. Okay. Yeah, I've forgotten everything of last week. All right, Night of the Demons.
All right. Until then, thanks for listening. And again, until next week, the basement is going dark.